Good afternoon. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Jay Hanselman filling in today for Mark Haney. John Else was series producer and cinematographer for the groundbreaking civil rights television series Eyes on the Prize. The series told the story from the point of view of ordinary people inside the civil rights movement, mostly African American. In his recently published book, True South, Henry Hampton and Eyes on the Prize, the landmark television series that reframed the civil rights movement, Else focuses on the tumultuous 18 months in 1985 and 1986 during production of Eyes on the Prize. He recently spoke with Mark Haney about the television series that became the classic narrative of the civil rights movement.
John, thank you for joining us today.
Good to be here.
Tell us about Henry Hampton. Who was he? What was he like?
Well, he was the creator of Eyes on the Prize. He was a really astonishing man, raised in segregated St. Louis, Missouri. Moved to Boston. He was himself involved in the civil rights movement. He was in Selma, Alabama, in 1965 during the events, the historic events there. Became a documentary filmmaker, and in the 1980s, he looked back at his experience in Alabama. He had marched on the Pettus Bridge, and as he marched across the Pettus Bridge, he looked around him at the news crews and at the marchers and at Dr. King, and he thought to himself, someday this is going to make a great story. So years later, he was in Boston. He had become a documentary filmmaker, and he decided to have a crack at it. So he set out on a massive, actually 26-part series about the civil rights movement, and it was a complete failure. The thing was a train wreck. It ran off the tracks. He was doing it for commercial television. At that time, neither he nor anyone else really knew how to make these big documentary series. This was years before historical television, years before Ken Burns. But he regrouped. He was a determined fellow, let me tell you. He was not about to let this story go. He saw that many of the foot soldiers and the warriors and the great leaders of the civil rights movement were aging and beginning to die, and he had to get the story told. So he regrouped with public television, public broadcasting in 1985, and set off for a more modest, initially a six-part series. And he was our leader. You know, he was the guy who he was like the Terminator. He just would not stop.
Wow.
It was a constant struggle. It was a 10-year struggle for him to get that thing funded and made. At one point, he actually mortgaged his house to meet the payroll. But he got it done.
Sounds persistent.
At the time, I was working on Eyes on the Prize. Yeah. I was commuting from California to Mississippi and Alabama and Boston. I was doing in California a lot of work with a young Steve Jobs. And Henry was a curious combination of a very, very philosophical African-American journalist and a young entrepreneurial Steve Jobs. I mean, he was an amazing fellow. We would have walked into cannon fire for that guy.
Well, how did you first get involved with Henry and Eyes on the Prize? How did that all come about?
I had worked in the civil rights movement myself in Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia, and had gone on to become a documentary filmmaker. And in 1985, I saw a little notice saying that there was a series about civil rights cranking up in Boston. So I picked up the phone and I dialed a number, and this friendly fellow answered the phone, and it was Henry Hampton. I had to be in Boston on business for another television series, so he told me to stop by their meetings they were having about getting Eyes on the Prize going. So I went to WGBH, the PBS mothership in Boston. I walked into the back of a screening room. It was dark in the room, and they were watching the now famous footage of the attack on the civil rights marchers on the Pettus Bridge in Selma. And right there in the dark, all my own memories of being in Selma welled up, and I just decided I've got to work on this series. So when the lights came on, I shook hands with Henry Hampton. I had a drink with him that night. He hired me on the spot. I took the job on the spot. And the next morning, I went to work on Eyes on the Prize, commuting from California to Boston.
Well, how is Eyes different from other chronicles about the civil rights movement? What makes it unique?
Well, Henry Hampton was determined that Eyes on the Prize, the civil rights story, would be the series would be made mainly by African-American filmmakers, by a mix of black and white filmmakers, men and women. But he really wanted this story told in a way that would bring the ordinary African-American people in the South, who were the ones who drove this movement from the bottom, from below, he wanted to bring them into the forefront of their own story. I mean, all the previous documentaries about civil rights had really focused on the, you know, the power of leaders like Dr. King, but they never had really grappled with the thousands, tens of thousands of ordinary black people in the South, you know, the maids and the waiters and the cooks and the janitors, who organized, took control of their own destiny, and put an end to segregation. He really wanted to put those folks on camera, not the people who wrote about them, not the historians, but those folks themselves, put them on camera. I mean, we forget that, for instance, in the Montgomery bus boycott in 1955, the first successful economic boycott that opened the floodgates for the end of legal segregation, Rosa Parks was an ordinary, unheard-of organizer who'd been working for 10 years, unheralded, in Montgomery, Alabama. Martin Luther King, who ended up leading that boycott, was an unknown 26-year-old preacher ministering to his flock in Montgomery. And that movement, like so many others in the South, rose up from below with ordinary folks. Henry really wanted to get that story told. He also wanted to explore the extremely complicated workings of the government. I mean, who's in charge in Mississippi when it comes to registering eligible voters? Is it the state? Is it the county? Is it the federal government? I mean, it's what we now, you know, it's federalism. It's all about, and we're very much in the midst of that same discussion right now. Who gets to decide whether it's legal to segregate lunch counters or not? And he was unafraid of the complexity and the messiness of that part of the civil rights story.
Mississippi Burning, John, the story of the civil rights workers who were murdered mm-hmm. in Mississippi in 1964. How did Henry Hampton, how did he want to contrast Eyes from that story that was told in Mississippi Burning?
Well, Henry was very, very, frankly, very angered by Mississippi Burning. It's a feature film about voter registration, about the murder of three civil rights workers in Mississippi in 1964. And the problem for Henry is that it's a story entirely about white FBI agents and the black Mississippians who we understood to be, the real heroes, the really courageous drivers of the freedom movement in Mississippi. Those folks are simply, they're victims who sing sad songs. That's how black people are portrayed in Mississippi Burning. I mean, at the time, 1964, the FBI had three black agents. It was A.J. Edgar, who was two chauffeurs, and his cook were the only black FBI agents. And yet there are black FBI agents that show up in Mississippi Burning. And Henry felt that this was just, you know, this was everything we had tried not to do in Eyes on the Prize. We had turned the world upside down to bring courageous local Mississippians to the foreground in that story. And here was a major Hollywood feature film that pushed entirely into the background of that story and put white federal police officers, federal FBI agents to the forefront. I got nothing against the FBI, nor did, well, I have little against the FBI, but it really rankled him. And he spoke out against it. He was very vocal in his critique of Mississippi Burning. I mean, I had been in Mississippi. I had been arrested very near the spot where the three young men were killed. And I was very conflicted about the film because I thought they got the history completely wrong, but I also felt this was, you know, it brought Mississippi, you know, into the foreground of the American conversation. I guess that was a good thing, even if the history was wrong.
And I'm talking with John Else. He's the author of True South, Henry Hampton, and Eyes on the Prize, the landmark television series that reframed the civil rights movement. What were some of the big challenges, John, that you faced and Henry faced in filming and producing Eyes on the Prize? How difficult was it to put that together?
you know, the biggest challenge on Eyes on the Prize was sleep deprivation. I mean, we were, I think I did 106 plane flights wow. for that project. You know, I remember, you know, we were just constantly on these puddle jumpers, you know, from one city in the south to the other. I remember waking up in airplane seats having no idea where I had been or where I was going. The biggest challenge, you know, the biggest challenge was funding. I mean, it's kind of unglamorous, but the biggest challenge was raising the money. These things are incredibly expensive. You know, major documentaries cost anywhere from $500,000 to $1 million or more. There was no corporate sponsor that wanted to put its logo on Eyes on the Prize in the beginning. There was certainly no corporate sponsor that wanted to put its logo on Eyes on the Prize 2, which looked at the late, at the 1970s and 1980s, looked at the Black Panthers and at black nationalism and affirmative action. So, Henry, we had to raise the money from foundations. It's public television money, mostly, and foundation money. In terms of the storytelling on screen in Eyes on the Prize, Henry was determined that he would get white people in the South who had resisted integration, who had resisted full black voting rights, he would get them on camera. He really wanted to give them the space to tell their story. And we had a very difficult time convincing former segregationists to sit down and talk honestly with us. To their credit, a number of them did. The director of the Citizens Council in Mississippi gave us a long, very candid, very good interview. The sheriff in Birmingham, Alabama, who had lived through all of the, you know, the fire hoses and dogs. Mel Bailey gave us a great interview. George Wallace himself, after a year of saying no, finally said yes, and we went down to Montgomery, Alabama, and interviewed George Wallace during his last term as governor, and he gave us a good interview. You know, we had a hell of a time pulling it over the finish line. Henry had to mortgage his house more than once, actually, to meet payroll, but it got done. And I think when it was finally finished, everyone was a little surprised at how popular it was. You know, We felt it was a story that was necessary to tell, and Henry kept insisting to us that we had to make films that were engaging. He kept asking, you know, how is this going to play for your cousin in Iowa? How is this going to play for folks, you know, in Michigan? How are we going to get ordinary, you know, white working guys in Brooklyn to watch this? And to our amazement, those people and a great many Americans, many millions of Americans, actually watched Eyes on the Prize.
In True South, John, you write about the black side method of filmmaking. Can you explain what is that method and how did it, you're talking about, it was the documentary series was so successful. How did that contribute to the success of Eyes on the Prize?
Well, Hampton, I mean, to his credit, Henry Hampton understood that the civil rights movement involved white people and black people, and he, more importantly, understood that our audience, our national audience, would be all kinds of Americans, black, white, men, women. So he insisted that the films be made by teams of filmmakers which reflected America. So every film in Eyes on the Prize was directed by two people, one black, one white, one man, one woman, and he made sure that throughout the production team, we had about, oh gosh, I guess 40 or 50 people working finally in the end. There were people from Harvard, there were people from the Midwest, there were people from Alabama, there were white Southerners working on the team. There were people who had been active with the Black Panthers. I mean, it was an amazing mix of diversity in every sense of diversity. He called it the abrasion of good minds. He felt that to tell these stories about this tremendously contentious time in American history, that we really had to, we kind of had to fight it out. You know, you had to get a whole lot of people with different opinions in the room, and that out of that dialogue, which he called the abrasion of good minds, out of that dialogue we'd become better films. Not perfect films, but better films. He felt that, you know, he said, we have secrets from one another, you know, across gender and across race. When you say police, you think one thing. When I say police, I think something else. So that was known as the black side method, and It was very exciting. It was exhausting. It was very expensive. It was very inefficient. But I think in the end, it clearly made the films better. It made the storytelling better. And I try to run my own operations now, years later, the same way I teach at the graduate school in Berkeley, and I try to run my classes the same way, try to get that abrasion of good minds and keep it from being simply abrasive, and just make sure it's productive.
So what's been the legacy of Eyes over the past three decades?
Well, on a dark day, I worry that the legacy of Eyes is not a whole lot. When newly elected president talks about John Lewis as a man who's all talk and no action, I think that maybe Eyes and the Prize was a waste of time for our elected president not to understand that John Lewis stood at the head of the march on the Pettus Bridge as 100 Alabama state troopers advanced toward him, stood there with dignity, and was beaten unconscious. That makes me think that, Eyes and the Prize has not completed its work by a long shot. On the other hand, after we finished Eyes and the Prize a few years later, Henry Hampton got a letter in his office from a young politician in Illinois, a guy named Barack Obama, who was asking Henry Hampton to look at the manuscript for his book. So, someone was watching it. I hope that Eyes and the Prize opened Americans' eyes to the sense that local, ordinary people, American citizens, are the ones who drive change for the better in this country. I mean, the leaders respond, and the leaders eventually, if they see enough dogs and fire hoses and enough outrage, they're finally going to pass legislation. But that never happens without thousands, tens of thousands of ordinary people organizing. I mean, that's a very, very vibrant part of what makes America lurch forward. And Henry saw that as no other filmmaker had. So I hope that idea is still alive. I think it is alive in the Black Lives Matter movement. I think it from time to time becomes very much alive in elections. And I hope that worked.
John, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
Producer and author John Else discussing his book True South, Henry Hampton and Eyes on the Prize, the landmark television series that reframed the civil rights movement.